Welcome to Crappy Friends, the podcast that discusses female friendships, the good, the bad, the ugly.
Girl power defeating bitchery since 2018.
I'm New York Times bestselling author Kristen Higgins.
And I'm USA Today bestselling author Josh Day.
And we're best friends.
Mm-hmm.
I'm feeling it,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
We are in the groove.
We're in the mood here. mm-hmm. We're doing it.
Oh, Josh.
Yes.
We have a novel.
I love it. Is it juicy?
It is super juicy.
Love it.
Yeah. And we'll have to pass it back and forth because
okay.
It may top 5 pages. I'm very excited. And listen, if your letter takes that long to get out, that's okay.
It is.
You know, there are times when we edit down letters and there are times when we want to read every salacious word.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of those times.
I will say, though, that if your letter is about your friend and her boyfriend, we'd rather hear about you and your friend.
Right. Okay. Let's remember the purpose of this podcast is to discuss your friendship,
yeah.
not your friend's problems.
Right.
Because we can't solve your friend's problems. She
right.
has to write to us
yes.
herself.
Yes, she should. Right.
All right. Okay. Now, buckle in.
Here we go.
You ready? Dear ladies, I discovered your podcast recently and zipped through the back catalog. It's sensational. I am hoping you can help me with a very puzzling situation. Full disclosure, my friend is male. However, I'm hoping I can convince you to keep reading because, one, this is about communication and conflict resolution incompatibility, which is surely universal, and two, one of my key questions is, would this situation have arisen if he were female? Let's call him Adam,
okay.
not his real name.
Mm-hmm.
Adam and I met 10 years ago when we both worked for the same crappy job in a city, London, that was new to us. Uh-oh, I'm going to start with the British accent.
Are you going to do it? The really bad one?
It's not on purpose, darling.
Yeah, the really bad one.
An instant and intense connection followed, and we spoke for hours of the week, mostly messaging online. When we met up, we always drank a lot and had a raucous time.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're British,
yeah,
right?
The Brits do that.
Yes.
Yeah.
I quickly came to think of him as a key figure in my life, and I was excited for what was beginning to feel like genuine intimacy. He was like the male version of me. Perhaps it wasn't necessarily helpful in the long run, but I thought of him as my cool friend. I think he became the person in my life I most wished to impress, whether that be with my jokes, intellect, or creative projects. He took up room in my head, but it wasn't unwelcome. An imagined figure to direct ideas towards can be quite motivating. Especially as I was young and still forming my identity. I strongly suspected I fulfilled a similar role for him. At least he seemed to find me equally as interesting and appeared captivated by our conversations. But one drawback in comparison to my female friendships is that he always lacked total sincerity. So much of his humor was detached and ironic that I was always left doubting whether I really meant much to him at all.
Mm.
So much so that I was quite surprised when, at my countryside wedding in 2019, I thanked his plus one for coming to a wedding so far out of town. She replied, "Of course, we wouldn't have missed it. After all, Adam had told her I was his best friend."
Wow.
A few months after that, I suffered a sudden bereavement. My dad, who had suffered periods of severe depression combined with episodes of psychosis, died by suicide.
Mm.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
As I had been trying to keep him safe from COVID, I had not seen him for the final 7 months of his life. I called Adam the same day in shock. He sent my mother flowers. Over the coming months, we talked about it all, and he offered distraction. Sometimes I cried, sometimes I told dark jokes, and he listened without judgment. He did feel like a support to me, but out of all my friends, by no means did I lean on him the most. I was careful not to trauma dump on him.
Mm.
When it happened, I had been writing a proposal for a book. Without being able to help it, the direction of the book abruptly changed to a memoir. In secret, I wrote the opening chapters, trying to figure out my feelings on the page, powered by the strange apocalyptic momentum of this particularly bewildering and reality-distorting type of grief. To cut a long story short, I was fortunate to quickly land an agent. We sold the book to the biggest and most respected London publishing house, and I spent the next 18 months writing it. Wow, good for you.
Mm-hmm.
I was, and continue to be, very proud of myself. Becoming an author had been my one dream since I was a teenager, and I achieved it without any industry context, just sheer force of will and more than a little spite at the universe. That's another side effect of grief. Who cares about falling on my face when the worst thing I could have imagined happened had already happened? However, because of the subject matter, pride soon gave way to anxiety. Was I exploiting my dad's memory? What if my family hated it and disowned me? By writing so confessionally, was I exposing myself in a way I would come to regret? Around Christmas 2021, I'd been having a terrible time at work, and the stress of the last few months had caught up with me. As my smartest and most well-read friend, I asked Adam if he would read a draft of the first few chapters. Checking multiple times that he was genuinely happy to help me before taking the plunge and sending him the most intimate piece of writing I could imagine out to its first real test audience. The response? Nothing.
Oh, God.
It was December. He was busy with family. I obviously didn't expect him to drop everything, but then I didn't hear from him for another month, which was very out of character, as we always had a conversation going. I was worried something had happened with his family, so that at the end of January, I asked if he was okay and did he have anything going on. He dismissed this, something about being rubbish at answering messages recently. Another month passed, and I asked again. Still no, just an everything's fine, how are you? A weirdly formal tone. By now, I was going mad with worry, in something close to agony. He must have hated my writing, I thought, and didn't know how to tell me, so instead was avoiding me. Worst of all, I felt so deeply mortified that I had shared something so incredibly personal, and, as my deadline loomed, the shame meant I could no longer write.
Oh, God.
Mostly due to the problems I was having at work and worry about speaking at the inquest into my dad's death, a legal requirement in the UK in cases of suicide, I had become very unwell during this period. I was signed off work by my doctor and was eventually sent for psychiatric evaluation. Adam was aware of this. By now, it was the middle of March, and I had had no mention from him about my work, only the most cursory responses to my repeated stabs at conversation. I suddenly realized he hadn't even inquired as to whether or not I had been committed. Then one day, without addressing the time that had passed, he messaged to ask if I wanted to see him for his birthday that week, and I snapped. I told him how hard I had found not hearing from him, how hurt and sad and confused I had been by his weird one-sentence replies for weeks, how humiliating I found the thought of him avoiding me, or, alternatively, how worthless if he had simply forgotten to read my work, knowing the importance of the project to me. A few hours later, he wrote back at length, but I didn't really get a sense of an explanation, and the apology was for not realizing I had been expecting feedback.
Oh my God!
He had been waiting for us to meet in person, he said. He had made no effort to arrange this at any point and knew I was too unwell to go into work during this period, that I was barely leaving the house. He also spoke about, quote, giving me space, unquote, but I hadn't asked for space. I had asked for help. Then he did give me his feedback. Positive, encouraging, but oddly formalized language, quote, politically forceful, compelling prose. Like the blurb you'd find on a book jacket. What I was astonished by was his light-hearted dig. One or two typos, maybe. See me. Just remember this now, but years ago I'd sent him a comic poem written purely to make a sad friend laugh. His response, it has potential. Take it away, Joss.
My response was measured. That I appreciated his explanation, such as it was. I said that I found it difficult to reconcile giving me space with the comprehension that withholding even a simple acknowledgement that he'd read my pages would create deep anxiety at a time when my mental health had been very poor, and this was known to him, and avoidable by way of a simple message, your work is good, let's talk when we meet, for example. To send him those pages and then not hear anything for nearly 4 months while our relationship had become weird and strained for no apparent reason, it was, I still think, a reasonable conclusion to come to. I told him I wouldn't have said anything, but it had been eating me up, and I didn't want to lose him as a friend. And then I attempted levity by saying, sorry for being a total drag at the moment. I was expecting a response. Here we were maturely talking it out. I was on the very precipice of forgiving him and clearing the air. He then ghosted completely. Radio silence for 8 months.
Wow.
2 weeks later, my husband was in a hit and run.
Oh, my God.
And when he came out of hospital, I had to take care of him basically full-time for many weeks. Amid the stress and horror, I wish so much that I had Adam to talk to. My other closest friends do not live in my city. Looking after my husband took precedence, but as he slowly got better, I never stopped thinking about why Adam just discarded me when I was in so much pain. I could forgive a difference in etiquette and didn't much care about our disagreement anymore, but this conflict avoidance, just dropping me from his life because of my silly feelings, hurt so much. However, a brush with widowhood made me very clear-eyed. If I wanted my book published, I had to get over the confidence crisis or everything I'd worked for was going to be taken away. My husband recovered. I went back to work and I finished the book. I had pushed the situation with Adam aside, had some grief counseling, and was much, much happier and healthier in all regards. It had been my belief that the onus should have been on Adam to get in contact, but I knew point scoring is not a healthy friendship behavior. So in November, I sent him a very conciliatory message. I went traveling in Sri Lanka for the best part of a month, and even with crappy and intermittent hotel Wi-Fi, I was able to see every day that he had been online and had seen my message, but had not bothered to reply.
What an asshole.
Yeah. After a month, I was finally done, and I told him so. To give him credit, he did apologize for not having replied and asked for forgiveness. Then to answer for the past year, he seemed to suggest I had somehow emotionally manipulated him, threatening him with withdrawing my friendship for some small perceived misdeed. A few years ago, I had gone quiet on him for a period when my dad had a bad psychotic episode and suicide attempt, nothing to do with Adam, as I had explained and apologized for. He said he felt I had been quite unfair to him. He had ghosted, he said, because it had been his birthday week, an adult with a birthday week, and he didn't feel like dealing with me.
Wow.
Wow. I wished him a happy new year. Since then, we've achieved a sort of entente. I decided I would never tell him anything personal again because I didn't trust his response to be kind. We have stuck to sending memes, talking about news, and making jokes. He still makes me laugh. I've invited him for coffee. I keep it light, and it was fine. Which brings me to my final problem. We've been friendly again for 6 months, and Adam still hasn't acknowledged my book. I don't mean he hasn't read it or forgot to say congrats on publication day. I mean he literally has not noted it exists. For me, that feels on the same scale as not acknowledging a baby I had. You're both authors, the first book is a life event, right? My husband wonders if Adam genuinely doesn't know or somehow forgot, but I can see he has seen my stories on Instagram promoting it. My question is, what the fuck? Am I being punished for calling him out once and forcing him to briefly look inward? Part of me feels pathetic for wanting validation from him, but another part of me thinks it is absolutely reasonable to want a friend to celebrate my dream coming true after almost unendurably hard 2 years. For what it is worth, tension or not, if roles were reversed, I would be yelling about his success to everyone who would listen. Far from close acquaintances have said incredible messages of support and left me amazing reviews. Work colleagues gave me flowers and champagne. One of my female friends took the day off work so she could read it cover to cover the day it came out. Which leads me back to the beginning of this letter. My husband thinks none of this would have happened if Adam was female.
Wrong.
I mean, I think wrong also. I mean, possible, but I do think wrong also. While my instinct is to resist such gender essentialism, I'm beginning to wonder if he has a point. I have two other close male friends, and although neither of them would have ever behaved like this, it is probably also true that we do not share the same emotional honesty that I do with my female friends. With any of my female friends, a disagreement like this would have been sorted within 24 hours. We would simply find the potential breakup too important not to attend to it immediately. I can't help thinking I got the wrong end of the stick completely, that Adam never thought of me as anything special, and I misheard his girlfriend saying I was his best friend. I also keep getting stuck on how I might have been unfair to Adam. I've questioned whether it wasn't just my knee-jerk defensiveness, because I do genuinely care if I've hurt him in some way. But I've searched myself and I really don't feel I've done anything wrong. I gave him so much benefit of the doubt. I just can't get my head around how he thought I could be punishing him when I was just heartbroken and ill.
It's called gaslighting.
Yeah, dear, that's what is what it's called. Because the dead dad stuff bores him. My God, that sentence. That's wow. Horrible. I haven't even mentioned the almost dead husband stuff. I worry I let him hurt me because he is male, and bringing up feelings all the time would make me embarrassingly female and uncool, and yes, a drag to be around. Likewise, he's giving me unasked for space. Feels a bit like when they used to lock menstruating women in the attic so they didn't trip over their inconvenient feelings all over the place. Call me when you've calmed down, honey. Yeah, I get that. Mm-hmm. Happy to report I'm doing very well now, but bringing up this unresolved mess might just undo all the progress I've made, so I don't really feel like I want to address it with Adam again. I've been through too much, and to have the thing that upsets me be a special birthday boy with poor manners and a silly little earring. I still believe we have a rare and unusual connection, and I expect I won't be able to stick to having him out of my life completely, but I now know he has the potential to skewer my confidence utterly. How do you think I should navigate it going forward? If you read this far, please know I'm beyond grateful. Any insights you would have would be so welcome. Signed, Eve, I guess, going all biblical theme. Yes, may as well.
Okay.
Let me know if you need any translation. There may be some British English specific phrases here. I am an expert in British mm-hmm. English. I used mm-hmm. to work no, for a British Arts Center, so I got it. Windscreen, I know about you, Windscreen. I got you. Yep. The boot, gotcha.
Chips are over
and
there.
We got it all.
Oh, Eve.
Yeah.
I feel like this is a very simple answer
mm-hmm.
to a very complicated and emotionally fraught relationship in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Your friendship with Adam is over.
Mm-hmm.
It's been over for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You just got to call time of death.
I agree. I think when his girlfriend mentioned that you were his best friend, that was her interpretation of matters. That was probably not Adam's interpretation of matters.
I think it's very possible that he could have referred to you as his best friend, but only because of how it would make him look to her.
Mm-hmm. Mm, truth.
My best friend, mm-hmm. super cool, mm-hmm. we worked together,
mm-hmm.
I have this amazing friend, and we're going to her wedding. She's my best friend,
mm-hmm.
really.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say that what you were to Adam, you think you have this special, unique connection. I think what you were to him was a test audience
mm-hmm.
for his coolness.
Mm-hmm.
You were not going to be romantic together. Mm-hmm. That seems pretty clear. You had somebody. So you were his sounding board.
Mm-hmm.
You were someone he could bounce things off of. You laughed at his jokes. That made him feel good. And vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a mutual situation where you both got some kind of response from the other gender
mm-hmm.
about how am I doing?
Mm-hmm.
And it was a positive response.
Mm-hmm.
I think that you referred to him as your cool friend.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that the minute you became cooler
mm-hmm.
by getting a big publishing contract, mm-hmm. that's when the friendship ended.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't handle it.
Mm-hmm.
He either didn't read your memoir, or he read it and was jealous of it, or he read it and hated it and was like, how come she got something that I don't have? I think you're being punished for being more successful.
Mm-hmm.
You took this huge tragedy of your life, and you transformed it into a work of art
mm-hmm.
that will reach other people
mm-hmm.
and has reached other people.
Mm-hmm.
And he can't stand it.
Yeah. I also think that your life got a bit too real for him. I think he liked it on a certain mm-hmm. level. And, you know, you with your dad and then your own problems and certainly what happened with your husband, that got a little too real. And
well, he didn't even know what happened to her.
That's true. He didn't know about that. But he wasn't about to be the person who was going to be there for you
right.
for all of that.
He sent your mom flowers. And
right.
After your dad died, even then you knew he's not the guy that I can cry on.
Right.
He needs me to filter myself
right.
and not trauma dump on him.
Right.
Which, I'm sorry, when your dad dies by suicide, you should be able to get really messy and sloppy with your friends.
You can grieve for as long as you need to grieve.
Babe. Especially with your closest
Especially
friends.
Especially with your closest friends. That's
and if
right.
they're like, oh, I'm uncomfortable with this.
Yeah. So my feeling is that you didn't have a true sense of the kind of friend he was for you.
Yeah.
You thought him as a good friend, what women often refer to as a best friend. And he probably thought of you as this great woman that he could go out and have drinks with, have a good time, right. have a laugh with, and that's it.
And be that test audience.
Yeah, and be that test audience, and that's it. So you, I think you attributed more to that connection that he did. I do think women tend to do that much more naturally than yeah. men do. So there is that. But yeah, Kristen's right. The friendship's been long dead.
Yeah. I think that for a lot of us, we want to paint the past in prettier colors because of what it says about us mm-hmm. as much as what it might say about the other person. So if you say, this guy used me and I used him,
mm-hmm.
we, you know, bounced things off each other, we enjoyed each other's company, but when things got deep and dark and difficult, he wasn't around. It's what you say, like, we had a rare and unusual connection. I don't think you did.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry to say that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what you're doing is romanticizing yeah. that so that it feels like it wasn't time wasted.
Right.
And it wasn't time wasted.
Right.
It was, I mean, he was in your head a lot. He mm-hmm. took up a lot of space. And that happens as we're maturing. We kind of get obsessed with people who are not filling us up with mm-hmm. positivity and support mm-hmm. and kindness. And we think, why, you know, this friendship has to be special because mm-hmm. it was, otherwise I'm a jerk.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Otherwise
has to mean
I'm an
something
idiot.
More. It's got to be significant. Yes.
So I don't think you had a rare and unusual connection. I think you were two people who worked at the same company.
Yeah.
And hit it off.
Yeah, had a good time together. Yeah.
And I think that to me, as an author who was dropped by a friend for getting published,
mm-hmm.
more than one friend, but this friend in particular, I remember similar situation. I sent her my first book for comments
mm-hmm.
and she savaged it.
Mm. Really?
Yeah.
Do I know this person?
No.
Mm.
And no longer friends.
Uh-huh.
Now, 25 years later, I can look back and see that, and knowing mutual friends, she did this to everybody.
Okay.
So don't get cooler
mm-hmm.
or else you're dead to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I've talked about her on the podcast before, but when my book came out, she did not acknowledge it. I sent her a copy.
Mm.
Her name is in the acknowledgements.
Mm-hmm.
I signed a copy, thanked her,
mm-hmm.
even though she had not really been helpful at all.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, she read the first draft and all. And when I called her out on, like, you have never said anything about
mm-hmm.
my book,
mm-hmm.
she became vicious.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just very hard for some people to watch their friends succeed.
Mm-hmm.
I think, too, like, especially in your situation, Eve, because your publishing success is linked with your personal tragedy, that's not easy to do.
Yeah.
That's remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
To write a memoir about something so devastating
mm-hmm.
takes a lot of courage and obviously, you were good enough to get a big contract with a big press. I think it just, he's the cool one.
Yeah.
It wasn't supposed to happen.
You weren't supposed to be cool. I will say, too, is I very rarely send my book to anyone for feedback unless it's like our dear friend Anne Renwick
mm-hmm.
or someone else in the writing community that I can trust. Not because I'm worried about people being mean to me. I absolutely can take it. I have a thick skin. But if I'm asking you for your feedback, it's because I want feedback. And I know people won't have time or
right.
don't want to be bothered or don't think it's as important to them as it is to me. So when you said, that you sent your first few chapters to him for feedback. I was like, he's not going to do anything with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or he's going to savage it.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, he would say, like, this is awful. But, and then when you called him on it and it was like, it's my birthday.
That was some bullshit. Sorry.
That, to me, that says it all.
Yeah.
Like, it was my birthday.
No, no, not just his birthday. It was his birthday week.
It was his birthday week. So 7 whole days.
Yeah.
Like,
how old is he? Are you kidding me?
Right.
Oh.
I mean, you're going through all this stuff. He knows you're in the hospital for a mental health crisis.
Yeah.
And still nothing.
Let me ghost you. It's his birthday week.
He ghosts you for 8 months.
That's some bullshit.
And then you're still trying, right? And I think you're still trying so that you can say, no, we had something rare and special.
Yeah.
Just difficult times.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like when you're dating someone and you have this magical first month. And you think, this is it. He's the one.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful. It's perfect. This is what love is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then the relationship comes into reality.
Mm-hmm.
And it just doesn't last.
Mm-hmm.
And you keep saying, but that first month,
yeah,
it was so great. Like, we have to get back to that. That was true.
Yeah.
This mediocre crap, that can't be true because I've invested all this time.
Right.
And I can't be that dumb. Right. But
you know, you're not dumb.
You're not dumb. You're dumb. Human.
Yes, you're
human. I think that's what we tell ourselves.
Sure,
like, I can't be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I can't be wrong. I've been in this relationship for a year now, and really only the first month was good.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, I can't have wasted 11 months by not pulling the plug. This is how we grow up.
Yeah.
This is how we mature emotionally. And I think what you need to focus on is that your friendship is over with
mm-hmm.
Adam. He has shown his true colors
mm-hmm.
by ignoring you,
mm-hmm.
by ignoring your success,
mm-hmm.
and by ignoring your depth of grief and trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So much so that you can't even tell him your husband was hit by a car.
And you nearly lost your husband. It's crazy.
That's not a friendship.
No.
I don't want to upset Adam by telling him about my life.
Yeah.
Fuck Adam.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You know. So I hope that you will just chalk this up to, I have learned so much about people.
And yourself, I hope.
I've learned a lot about myself, my resilience, my tendencies, the people I can really count on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that friend who took the day off to read your book? That says so much.
Come on, that's the friend.
That's your friend right there.
I mean,
the people who posted reviews.
Those are the
your
friends.
Your colleagues. You've got a lot of good people in your life.
Yeah.
And Adam may have been one of those people for a time.
Mm-hmm.
He is no longer.
I think, too, I hope you learned about the different kinds of friendships you can have and learning how to better discern who belongs in which group. So Adam is your surface friend group. This
mm-hmm.
is the guy you can go to the pub with, have a drink with, have a laugh, you know, talk a lot of bullshit philosophy while you're getting drunk at the pub,
mm-hmm.
and then head back home to your hubs and your real friends.
Right.
That's Adam. He's not for anything else, nothing deeper. And so it's important to be able to make those distinctions early on. And unfortunately, this is the way you learned that lesson.
Yeah.
But I'm hoping that you can, like, really mine this experience for all the good things that you're
mm-hmm.
learning about Adam, about yourself.
Yeah.
Because it has been a helpful experience. It's been painful, but it's been really educational.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, Joss,
hmm.
we've talked about this in the past. Do you think that it's possible for a heterosexual woman and a heterosexual man to have a deep and meaningful friendship
for
a long period of time?
No. I'm going to say no, but I'm old. I don't know what these kids are doing these days. These Gen Z kids, these, you know, younger millennials, these middle millennials. I don't know what they're doing. But Gen X, me, our generation,
mm-hmm.
Also known as, I think we're being called the sandwich generation.
I think we're
too.
Called the coolest generation.
We are, in fact, the coolest.
Right. I mean, there's the greatest generation.
Right.
Not that,
no.
But we're the coolest.
We are the coolest. We're all the sandwich generation. We're the people who have kids and also have to take care of parents.
Right, right.
when I was growing up, that was not something that could happen. And not because it was taboo or, you know, gender roles were different, which they certainly were, but because the intimacy that you create from a true and lasting friendship, when it's between a heterosexual man and a heterosexual woman, that intimacy always crosses the line into sex, and that will always fuck up the relationship. That's just my thought.
Looking at myself.
You had a good guy friend, though. Didn't you?
I have had good guy friends.
Yeah.
Gay.
Yeah.
I have childhood friends.
Yeah.
Who are friends because of our childhood.
Right.
They're not current intimate friends. I don't call John and say, hey, you know, I'm at the worst day, John.
Right.
So I agree with you.
Yeah.
I don't see it happening. I, in theory, love it.
Mm-hmm.
In reality, I don't know a single woman who has a very close best friend who is a straight male. Even when they're married, it's either a historic friendship that has lasted. Because back then, when we were 10, it didn't matter. Or when we were in college, we were all in the friend group.
Mm-hmm.
Or we were workmate friends. Now, you have a married male friend.
But I don't call him up and be like, I really need to talk.
Yeah.
I never do that.
I need to tell you about my mom or my dad or something.
I never do that.
Right. It's a pretty... There's a lane for that friendship.
Yeah.
And you don't deviate out of the lane.
No.
And I think that in the early years, Eve, when you're describing your friendship with Adam, it to me does sound like these two young people feeling each other out, feeling themselves out as they relate to the opposite sex.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that sounding board.
Mm-hmm.
Am I funny? Oh, he thinks I'm funny.
Yeah.
He's cool.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if there was no attraction between you, even so, you're still kind of using each other as that sounding board and that test audience. You know, your husband said, what was it? Would this have happened
if female?
If he was female? I think absolutely it could have happened as a female.
Yeah.
Sure.
People are mean across the board.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I think that Adam has had we were talking about this earlier about like gendered responses and that kind of thing. You know, like when one woman gaslights you, it feels worse because you're a woman and she's a woman. And maybe like there's expected bad behavior from men or women if you're a man or a woman. Depending, but I think your husband's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is just bad friend behavior.
Yeah, he's just a bad friend.
And I hope that you're really enjoying all the good things in your life.
Yeah.
Your success, your marriage, your husband's recovery, and all these other people who are showing you in act and deed and word. That they're there for you.
Yeah.
Time to scrape the Adam dust from your shoes and
keep
walking.
I'm not sure what he's doing for you now. Why are you keeping him around?
Yeah. It doesn't seem like she is, but just trying to sort it out in her head.
Yeah, I hope that's it. I mean, I don't want you to feel like, oh, maybe we'll get together and go out
even
and drink.
Like the occasional coffee to show that we still can.
Yeah.
It's like when you break up with someone, you're like, but we'll still be friends.
We'll still be friends, right.
But you won't be.
No.
Not for long.
No.
It's just kind of a transition phase.
Right, right.
Yeah. So, congratulations on your memoir.
Absolutely, Eve. Congratulations.
And keep looking forward to what's next for you.
Do, and join a writer's group so you can have folks who are interested in working with you look at work if you need feedback.
Yeah. It is always dicey to ask someone really close to you to read your stuff
For their opinion, that's right.
Yeah, can't wait to hear what's next from you.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode, check out our book, Crappy Friends, The Ultimate Guide to Female Friendship.
Send your friendship letters to the ladies at crappyfriends.net.
I'm Kristen Higgins.
And I'm Joss Day.
And we're best friends.
Forever.